This is Channel One Right. This is Channel One Right. Saturday night, pretty late, the 27th of March, 1971, Ralph reporting. Ralph came over to visit. Mabel died, and the funeral is tomorrow, Sunday afternoon. And this is Channel One Right. The beginning of the tape was Ralph. Saturday night late, I just got cleared, you know, and got my wits together, and right after supper, and we set about getting hold of him. This Saturday night, the 27th of February, 1971, Channel One Right. Channel One Right. This visit with Ralph.
You know what, Faye? I can always sit down for 5 or 10 minutes and get a lot of rest, and then go, go, and go.
Yeah.
Just go
again. Let me tell you, Faye, we could have a little cup of milk or coffee or cider or something. I haven't had any refreshment. I've been wore out. Sit down.
All right.
Stand up. Stand up. All right.
Well, tell me what you
drink
after those coffees.
We just been harassed all day. I've been trying to get loose and couldn't.
I've been drinking coffee, iced tea.
Give them some good old water, Faye. There's some right there.
Yeah, well, not in the water, not right now. I just had.
Okay.
I was so tired up at the one of his house. I said, I'm going to have a little drink. And I had a can of Hoppin' Gator. I said, well, I'm ready to go anywhere now.
You said that. Well, we'll let you just sit there a minute
and
get your breath.
Right, right.
I'll be right back.
You seen everybody today?
Most everybody, yes, uh-huh. I got up this morning at 5, and the wife is working. Got her off to work, and I worked real late last night. I got in, just closed my eyes for a few minutes, and I said, I'll get up and feed the kids. Telephone rang, this morning to tell me about Mom. And I couldn't go back to sleep, and finally about 11:30 I did get to sleep. Got this morning down 3 cups of coffee, still couldn't get my eyes open. So went on and had breakfast at 8:00. I get up from 5 to 8, I couldn't get my eyes open. So I had breakfast and another 2 cups of coffee. I said, well, I can make it now. Gassed up and hit the road. Put the foot in the gas tank, and I didn't take it out until I drove a little station wagon down. And I gassed up in Atlanta. I got down here and I still got a quarter of a tank of gas. It's one of these little 6-cylinder jobs, you know, slanting in.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that'd drive. I drove 400 miles and used 18 gallons of gas. Good, real good.
And it sits all right. I tell you, these old high-compression motors just give me so much trouble. I don't think I can afford them. I can't afford them.
I can't afford one of them, no. The wife's got a Dodge Polara, one I drove down here when Pop passed away. And that thing has been trouble. Eats up the gas, just drinks like you're pouring it down the sink, like it's going out of style.
Mm-hmm.
And the company's not worth it to me, guy.
No, it's not that much company.
No, no. Because I spend my time behind a desk, not in an automobile.
Yes.
Now, my company, I like the way they operate because they put a man on the field, and he drives 600 to 800 miles a day. He's got the best automobile money can buy, air conditioning, power, all the trimmings.
Yeah.
Well, that's well and good. So you've been behaving yourself?
Yes and no. I can't get loose much. I sort of tied down.
Is that right?
I had hoped that there'd been some reason for you to drop down, but it hadn't been long since you were here, had it?
I was here back in November. You know when Pop passed away?
Yeah.
November 11th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And time passes so fast.
Oh, it just gets away just like that. Mm-hmm.
And you're at it all the time.
Oh yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
You know,
You know, it's a shame, that Mabel didn't have a few more years. She needed.
That's right. She needed, right. Mm-hmm.
She needed. She has that quality that few people have anymore, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
Where she can talk and people listen to her. And she, I don't know, I call it a sort of public life. I don't mean run the office.
No, I understand.
She lives a sort of public life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. We just don't produce them that way anymore.
That's very true. Mm-hmm.
I don't know them, you see. I can't tell very much. I don't know them, of course, like you do. But Phil and Mabel were so different.
So much different.
But the things that one could do, the other couldn't do.
Well, the universe is made that way. You got positive and negative everything.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, what causes creation? I can't answer that for you. Who put the North Pole up there and the South Pole down there? Yes, so much different. But they both had a certain something, a quality there that nobody else has had, not to my knowledge. And they could just certainly get to you in a certain,
yeah,
in their own way, each one of them in their own way.
Yeah.
It's just like that child licking that lollipop, he goes back to some more.
They hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
They just hit it off beautiful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just beautiful. Yes, that's nicely. I don't, Finn, not that way at all. But Phil would tell a little experience and the name didn't come to him and Mabel would remember it.
Right. She filled in the empty spots.
They were right there. You see, they thought it in the same time. Something or other. I don't know what it is. Yes, sir.
Guy, do you have an ashtray laying around somewhere?
Yes, sir.
Wait,
I'll find that right there, that old saucer.
Oh, excuse me. Right. You know, you get away from the polluted town of Atlanta,
mm-hmm,
it's about.
You got.
And,
oh,
yeah, I have everything right here, right here. You get out here in the country, you breathe a few breaths of fresh air, and you feel like a different person. You might think you're tired, and then all of a sudden you're rested
up.
Yes.
Yes.
Because up in Atlanta, with the riff-raff and the hustle and bustle and what have you.
Yeah, it's constant.
It just wears you down before you get started. And this goes on day in and day out. You people are very fortunate down here, you know it?
Yeah.
You're very fortunate.
Yeah. As long as it lasts.
Get you back down here.
The trouble is, you don't know how long it's going to last anywhere now, do you?
Well, I tell you what, if I was sitting out here like you are, I would not worry about it. I'd enjoy every minute I possibly could.
Yeah.
Because when I come down to this part of the country, I thoroughly enjoy every breath of fresh air that I take. Believe you me, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Rounded Phil always have a lot of on-hangers, a lot of people that he worked along with. Now, I noticed after he got up here at the university, he found places for a lot of people, things like that.
You know what, guy? He's found a place for everything under the sun,
yeah,
including a stray cat or a stray animal. He found a place for it. He had that certain touch. I've never heard him use a curse word or raise his voice as long as I've known him. and he could find a nigger young'un, or a cat, or a stray dog, or what have you, he'd take it home to you.
Is that right?
And the people, he'd reach in his pocket. He always kept a little money hid from Mabel, because Mabel liked to spend money.
Oh, she did.
Isn't that something?
But you know what? I can think back. I saw the man with $20,000 in his pocket, cash money.
Yeah.
And he bought a sawmill. This is up in Folkestone or Waitrose, Georgia, which was it? Been a good long time ago, though. And so the next weekend, I went up to see him, and he wanted to borrow $20 from me. And I took it as a joke. I thought he was kidding. He was not kidding. To buy groceries with.
Is that right?
That's right. And when he said it to me, well, he always kidded around quite a bit. I just ignored him entirely.
Yeah.
A few minutes, he says, are you going to let me have that $20 or not? I says, Pop, you kid me. Don't try it. You pull him a leg. He said, I'm not. I ain't got no groceries in the house. And back then, I was in a CC camp making $45 a month, I think. But I always had kept some in reserve.
Yeah.
And I said, sure. Because money never meant anything to me in life anyway, except for the convenience, see.
Yeah.
And I gave it to him. I said, I'm trying to put two and two together. I said, nah, that man cannot. I said, $20,000 back then was like $150,000 today almost.
Yeah.
So I gave him $20 and I forgot all about the doggone thing. He called me up. Wouldn't know when I was coming up there to get my $20. He said, if you're not coming up there, I'm coming down there. He said, you don't have that kind of money to throw away. I said, I didn't throw away. It's for good use. So you said, that's as simple as that. But that's the kind of person. He had so many qualities. He's so terrific guy that only time will bring those things out. So simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know the old saying in life, you cannot deviate from simplicity. That goes with character, people. Anything you do.
Yeah.
Well, I think it is, anyway.
Now, Mabel liked to spend money, but he didn't.
Well, he went along with Mabel, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Oh.
But see, now Mabel, she'd sneak around and find his money. But he kept a little bit back in reserve, especially after he got these grandkids.
Yeah.
And Paul, you know, having the trouble with the speech and what have you, she could go to him and put her arms around his neck and kiss him. And damn, if he couldn't find $20, he didn't have a dime in his pocket, he could find 20 bucks for that child. Now, that's one thing he and I had. That one $20 is the only money that ever exchanged hands between Pop and I, as long as I've known. We have never discussed finances or financial problems, anything else. Never have.
Mm-hmm.
Because we thought this was unimportant.
Uh-huh.
But he always made a good living. And I tell you what, he kept plenty of groceries in that house too.
Yeah.
And on the weekend, 15, 20, 25 kids up there, people, make them a pallet, sleep on the floor. But them groceries were there.
Yeah.
Now, Mabel cook up groceries. Now, she's a good cook on certain things, but very wasteful.
Oh.
Oh, yes. She'd cook up a chicken and maybe throw 2/3 of it away. For me, man, if I got chicken left over, I'll put it in the deep freeze and I'll make chicken salad, I'll make everything. Because I can take a dime, I can stretch it as far as most people can, $10.
Yeah.
Because I was brought up that way, the hard way. But Pop put so much stuff on the table to her, and he worked hard. He worked real hard. He left it up to her to do whatever she wanted to. He couldn't fry an egg, couldn't make a cup of coffee, nothing. But those qualities he had were very deep, I think, for that guy.
He could do anything.
Yes, he could.
But he never let on.
No.
Very seldom.
One day I was kidding him, I said, Pop, I'm broke. You got any money? He says, I got more money than a cow's got guts. How much you need? And I knew he didn't have a dime to his name. I said, let me see your bill for. He said, I don't think that's any of your damn business, what I got in my bill for.
it sometimes, and then sometimes he just flat broke.
Right, right.
And that went with the business.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. He moved up into, what's the name of the place just south of Jackson? Bayard. He moved in there, and that's when he sold out his place up in Kingsland, around Okano Swamp, and moved into Bayard and bought up how many thousand acres and half timber he bought up, I forget. I don't remember this point. But he bought all these trucks, equipment, what have you. He had a small motel as it went back at that time. He just moved into the motel. He rented these rooms and whatnot, and he and maybe just moved in there, and he lost his pants on that thing.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. See, it's tricky speculation in that time. In comes the floods and what have you, and the water was this deep. He couldn't get in there to get the timber. And he had a contract to have this timber out of a certain period of time. He didn't get it out. But he could walk into the bank with his smooth line of talking to his infant face. And he could get $10,000, $20,000 for no other man. Without all kinds of assets, couldn't get it. He could get it, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the stories that I remember he told, and I got him to tell it again.
And he don't miss a word.
When he was 16 years old and went up to Atlanta and bought that shingle machine.
Yeah, right. And he'll tell you what motel he stayed in, too. He can tell you about the Healy building there, about old man Healy.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I know this is true is because I had an office in that building for 3 years.
Yeah.
And he can tell you right down the line. His memory's amazing. And it was up until he passed away. And in fact, before he passed away, his memory got sharper.
Yeah.
Extremely sharp.
Mm-hmm. When he was 16, he walked in and talked to the head man. I forget, Moresby or something. Made all that milk. And he let him have a shingle machine and shipped it down there for him. And he didn't have a nickel.
Right, right.
Now there was something about the man, cause he talked well.
Oh yes.
And he knew how to handle it and showed it, you know, from the way he talked. So now that would take him a good ways, wouldn't it?
That will take him a long ways.
Yeah. And nothing wrong with his powers of he learned just by looking, couldn't he?
With his power of speech and power of personality and the way the thing guy in my line of thinking, it's look at a man's eyes, his lips and his hands when he's talking.
Yeah.
To get the sincere and the quality from him. And that man, I have come to his house many times at midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning. Have a cup of coffee, some cold collard greens or turnip greens and cold cornbread, and sit there and talk till daylight.
Yeah.
And that voice is so smooth and so beautiful.
Yeah.
That you couldn't miss a word he said.
Yeah.
Because he was not the repetitious type to repeat things. Everything was something different each time.
Yeah.
And so therefore, any person interested in life or human beings could not get possibly get bored with it.
Yeah.
Or not that I could see.
There's Suzanne, she wants to sleep in the trailer tonight.
Oh, really?
Thank you. I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the young lady we met down here the last time, isn't it?
And all those years of talk. Mabel was pretty hard-headed.
Yes, she was rather hard-headed, and for this particular reason, I shouldn't say put it that way. There's many people resented the friendship between Pop and I. And Mabel was one of them. She's a little bit jealous about that thing because we would be talking. Whether she thought, I don't think her line of thought ran in the same direction as he and I, his and mine. But she did not want he and I to get off together at any time. Lord, did she raise hell about that. But he and I would go off hunting or fishing, or out on the farm on the tractor or in the pickup truck. It didn't matter. Sit out and watch the cattle and just sit down and talk and talk. Just keep on. And we forgot about time entirely. Now, was the time element involved? I don't know where it was at, or the friendship or whatnot. But we'd come in and she'd swell up like an old toad frog.
Yeah. Well, I noticed, you see, Mabel talked so well, I could have just put the tape on over there and just encouraged her. But she wouldn't talk for the tape. Phil didn't care.
No, he didn't care. See, people have a certain fear now. She brought out this thing about the tape with me, and you know, certain people just like, these people can't even talk on a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get a microphone and they know this is being recorded, and they just freeze. So, what it is, I don't know, because I've never been that way.
And now, when she was talking about the Holy Roller business, she didn't object.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She'd talk to that and just look right straight at the tape.
Oh, yes.
But when she started talking about ordinary things,
everyday things,
it wasn't anything private about it. She wasn't good. And it wasn't the content. Of course, she didn't realize that. She didn't have the critical intelligence for that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the content of it. It was her manner.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and her personality and all like that. That you got in her speech.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. It wasn't what she said.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to sit over there and I just hated to see all that good talk go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I finally, Phil got so he'd go off with me and we'd sit and talk for half an hour. But it wasn't like talking to Jose, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't care about the bit of attention.
Mm-hmm.
I never said very much. He talked better over there, you see, than he did when he was somewhere else.
Well, that's very true. That's very true.
And I couldn't work through anybody in the family. I didn't know the others, and Juanita isn't what you'd call a trusting soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't work through her.
Mm-hmm.
If I had someone to work through, you see, I could have got so much fine, beautiful talk.
Guy, if I could have known you a few years back, because I can get Pop and set him down in his lounge chair over a cup of coffee,
uh-huh.
And I can just bring up a few things that he has discussed years ago.
Yes.
And he gets into these things and he starts a new series of speeches. This is where I could have brought out all of these different things to you.
Yes.
There's been no problem. There's been no problem. Because,
yeah,
see, I let him into all these things.
Yes.
Because I like to hear his voice and the way he expressed himself.
Yes.
And I'd lead him into this because I enjoyed it.
Yes.
Sometimes he'd be in kind of a bad mood and I'd sling some stuff at him. And, just any petty thing like you would a kid.
Yes.
But I'd get his mind off of that. Sometimes I'd be halfway sarcastic to him. He'd look at me in my eyes. He didn't quite have, but he'd get off in that spiel,
yeah.
And I'd lead him right in that, and this would go on for hours.
Yeah.
Going for hours.
Yeah. Now that's something.
I don't know if I told you the last time I was down here, I bought his last fishing license for him down in Crystal River. Paul and Monique was living down at Crystal River at that time, and they only had the one baby, and that was Mary, the one that's married to Willie Geiger. And I believe I'm correct on this. Maybe they had the twins. I don't remember this point. But anyway, I went down, and I said, well, Pop's getting kind of well up in years. And we went out got up real early in the morning about 5 o'clock. go down to the fishing pier, and we got us a little rowboat with two oars, and that was it. And I told Mama, I said, well, me and Pop's going fishing. I said, you know what, I'm going to buy him his last fishing license. That's when he was 65. After 65 in Florida, you don't have to buy one. So she said, all right, well, y'all hurry up and get on back. That's okay, we will. And God, we got up that daylight, went to the fishing place and got us a bait. And we got out there in the boat, and you got fresh and salt water intermingling, so you get fresh and salt water fish. And we sat out there and fishing with a nigger line and the casting rod, and we were talking. One thing from another, right on. And so we were catching fish too, enjoying every bit of it. And Pop did like to catch fish. And time went on and on and on. We had no lunch with us, no nothing. All we had was cigarettes, period. I said, Pop, you know it's getting dark. I said, let's see how many fish we got. We had a dish pan about this. I said, I think we got almost enough fish for supper. I said, you know what? We haven't eaten all day long. You know what? He said, the hell with you. We don't need food anyway. And so that's one day that a guy, if you could have had a recording of that particular day, I guess we discussed everything in life, including his background, mine, and just things in general. Just ordinary, just plain people, let's put it that way. But we pulled back in up the pier. He stretched a leg and he says, damn, you know I'm tired. I said, you're not too tired to eat fish, are you? He said, hell no, I'm never too tired to eat fish. So we go back up there, got our fish, and we dumped them into the thing there, and go around the house, and man, Mom is mad as she could be. She been just raising Cain all day long, fighting with Paul and Molly, where's Ralph and Falcon? Now, this is something she couldn't stand.
Yeah.
Bell and I, we didn't care. We didn't worry about anybody else's son.
Yeah.
So she blew up and this and that and the other, and I told her one day, I said, just get the fine pan on. I didn't pay attention to Mom at all.
Yeah.
Let her blow a stack. Let her get good for her. So he and I got out there and started cleaning fish. And we cleaned most of those fish. And we had, and one day she started cooking fish and hush puppies and what else. We had a platter about this big. And Juanita, well, Mom wouldn't eat fish. No, she didn't want any fish. It wasn't good or this and that. No, she had to have a hamburger or something like that. Me and Pop, we eat anything. But she says, Phil, you can't eat that. It's bad for your heart. He says, Mabel, get off my damn back. He says, I've been fishing all day long. I caught these fish. I've cleaned them, and I'm going to eat them. Whether you like it or not, just go in the other room. But
she put out with it.
Yeah, but he said it with a smile in his eyes, but he meant it very strongly. She knew that thing, too. We sat there, guy, and we ate fish, and we ate fish. And we had a stack of bones on each one of our plates about this big. And he said, now see that, Mabel? Fish ain't gonna hurt nobody's heart. It's all in your mind.
Well, where did Phil get that that iron disposition? And, or when he said it, he smiled and he meant it. Where did he get that? Always had it?
I believe, now working niggers and whatnot around the sawmills. And when he told him one time, he meant that thing and he didn't raise his voice.
Yeah.
And I think, in fact, I know he just about or maybe killed a couple of them. And the word got around in a hurry.
Yeah.
And when he said something, he meant that thing and he said.
But his voice was soft.
Soft as could be.
But he still carried that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Quality.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Very amazing, yeah.
That is amazing.
He didn't raise his voice at all. Didn't scream at anybody.
Oh, he cracked me every now and then.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
I could tell when I got cracked or not.
Right, right.
Yeah. Faye?
Yeah.
I think she's running errands.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find one of those.
This is one of my young friends.
We don't care about that, see?
I know it. So, flashlight. We have to have more flashlights out here.
Well, that's good. Yeah, you always hear the crickets and frogs croaking.
Yeah.
That's good. That's real good.
Sure it is. You can hear them right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's marvelous.
Very much so, yes. Mm-hmm.
You don't handle these things.
Just
use office tapes.
How's that guy?
Well, I tell you, I never really put my mind to it, but I guess I don't, because I don't think in those kinds of stuff.
You just use office, you don't fool with tape recorders. I mean, you have, do you use office tape?
That's right.
We have a disc recording certain things.
Yeah.
Then, instead of using a tape recorder, we have electronic secretary.
Oh, hell, I think I'm on a wrong reel.
Yeah.
Electronic secretary, where you speak into a typewriter and your voice.
Shit. And I never will forget that. Day about 1 o'clock. That stuff rolled in there on a fleet. Boy, before sundown, I had it unloaded and I had it out there in a good color place.
Yeah. Sound like it?
Exactly like it, right down to the nth degree. Right down to the nth degree.
There's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It really gives you insight, doesn't it?
It does. It does, guy. Mm-hmm. And see if you could possibly have it on tape of all that I have up here.
Yeah.
Because believe you me, I have a memory. I forget nothing. And I've been this way since I was a child. But the good part about it, I remember the good things, the pleasant things in life, not the misfortunes and what have you. They never enter my mind.
That's nice.
I think it is. Because I come now work with, it's a pretty good site outfit. We have 202 employees up there. We're a very diversified company. And I'm involved in computer school and everything. I go to school every day, practically every day. I've been going to school all my life.
Yeah.
And every time a new course is that much more exciting.
Yeah.
The other day, one of the VPs asked me, he says, why don't you ever have any problems like the rest of the people? I says, one little secret to that thing. I'm the only damn one around here don't have sense enough to have any problems. No, this fellow fell. He's, I've seen him stop and think. But never a problem. Never had a problem in his life. He pulled off that hat and he scratched his head. He says, that kind of creates a problem, don't it? That's for the time being only. You said that, not thinking. But you got a point there. And you talk about figuring that lumber. I've been down to the sawmill. I worked with the sawmill out there with the rest of the niggers. Feeding them slabs and whatnot, and I got tied up with that saw one day and got a slab in there and it went through the top of it. And he says, son, you don't do things like that. He says, if you don't learn, you watch these damn niggas. It's okay. I watch the niggas and I learn. Blisters.
Yeah.
That's all I learned.
Yeah. That was always close to us in that sawmill, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. That was his bread and butter. That was his livelihood.
Yeah.
And he worked that thing around the clock.
Yeah.
That's all he knew back then, though. God, that's all he knew.
Yeah.
But he lived out in the country. He'd seen these farmers, and he wanted to get onto a farm. That was his life's desire, to get onto a farm. And that's when he bought the place up here. And when he started to build this particular house, he sat down there and talked to me, and he says, what do you think about this? He said, I've got all this cypress lumber, and he says, I'm just going to go in there and I'm going to cut it. The yellow cypress or red cypress or black cypress or white cypress, I'm going to cut any kind of board I take the notion to, and I'm just going to throw it on there. And when I build this house, I'm just going to reach down and pick up a board and let it. I thought, well, he's crazy as hell. I didn't tell you. I said, well, Pop, I tell you what, I don't know the first thing about lumber. He said, well, I do.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I think it's going to be something different. I said, well, you put the house up and I'll wire it for you. And I wired that house up that far.
Yeah?
Yeah. No. I was going to electrical engineering school back at that time. And so he says, can you wire the house? I said, yeah, I can wire it. No problem on that. I said, if I can't, you call an electrician, I'll pay for it. So I'd drive down from Jacksonville. I'd get Paul up there, and I'd bring someone else to help me. And on the weekend, we'd get in there and wire it, and we'd, well, we filled in the PEX cypress certain holes and patched up certain things. We'd come down on the weekend, and we'd spend the weekend down working on that. Well, he found a commode somewhere and took it up there. They had a big old windmill up there that was by this tree, and lightning struck it two or three times and knocked the tree all over the house, and finally the tree had to go. But Paul and I, back at that time, we did a lot of hunting around here. Oh, we did a lot of hunting at night. We liked rabbits, and we'd get out with our carbide lights on our head and kill these rabbits. Nothing go out and get 8 or 10 rabbits a night. And Pop like rabbits, we did too, and Mom would cook them up. Well, mainly what we'd do, we'd give them these niggas around the place here. They had a couple of maids back then. We'd give them these rabbits to these maids and whatever. But anyway, we were quite active with them 22 rifles, and Pop had this commode up there. And we put something on that commode to shoot it, miss a target, hit the commode, knocked the hole in. Well, back then, a commode didn't come easy. Pop raised hell about that thing. But I said, Pop, I didn't know you had that up. I said, I thought they were just laying up your own new one. Pop says, I forget where you brought it from. Because you raised so much hell about it. But anyway, going down, let's see, go down this little road here, and going in towards McIntosh, a little nigger church on the right over there. Me and Paul one night met up there hunting, and we didn't know that church was there. And the rabbits always around the graveyard. And we found a couple rabbits out there, and they jump around behind these vases where they keep flowers. And it's hard to tell a rabbit's eye from this light shining on this vase. And we began to shoot vases and rabbits too, and we broke up church down there and didn't know it. All the niggers down on the floor and praying. There wasn't but half a dozen or so. And we didn't know this thing. And all of a sudden, I said, wait a minute, Paul, there's a building over there. And we got out of there in a hurry. Pop used to laugh about that thing. We breaking up nigger church. Oh, it caused quite a stink. Nobody got hit with a bullet, though. It scared the life out of me because we didn't want to do anything at all wrong. Not intentionally. But, you know, two young boys. I see. Right now, Paul is, I think Paul's 44 and I'm 56. I'm about 12 years older than Paul. But back then, we'd go out here and we'd hunt and we'd fish, and every time I'd killed something, I'd bring it home for Mom to cook it. I never forget over here by the River Styx Road. There's a lake way over there. And I'm sitting in the car by myself, and I saw one of these bald eagles over there. I said, I've never killed an eagle in my life, but I'm going to take a shot at this one. And I elevated the scoop on the rifle. And back then, I was good with it. I was real good. Must have been almost a mile. I elevated that sight and cut on that eagle. Just like that. Hit him right here in the shoulder and busted his wing. So I said, well, I killed him. I got to go get him. So I got out of the car and walked through the pile mounters and the briars and everything else, got around the other side of the lake, and he was mean. His talons was this long and a beak about that long. So I took the .22 and put it right between his eyes. So I took him back to the farm and threw him in the trunk of the car. And when I drove up, I said, Pop, come here, I want to show you something. And so he said, what you got, son? I said, I killed one of the eagles over there. He said, you kidding? You can't get that close to him. I said, well, I can prove it. And I pulled out the trunk. I said, pull out of the wing here. If I remember right, a little better than 8 feet wing spread. Oh, a tremendous thing. Pop says, son, you gonna eat him? I said, not this one, Pop. I'll eat anything else, but the eagle, I don't think I can stand that one. But behind the house, this pond behind the house used to be quite deep. Used to be a lot of mud fishing there. This long, a lot of bullfrogs.
That pond down below the
barn. Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It had filled up, I guess.
Yes, it's dried up and filled up with this, what, no. But bullfrogs were in there, and they had, legs just bigger than, well, much bigger than your fingers. They weighed 3 or 4 pounds, the biggest bullfrogs I've ever seen in my life. And I'd go down there and kill some of them. I'd bring them up there for Mom to cook them. And I walked in the house, and them damn frogs, I thought she was going to beat my head off.
No frogs. And she knew what she liked, what she would have, too.
Yes, she was rather peculiar on her eating. Well, not really peculiar, you know, not taking into consideration, because, see, I was raised down in Florida in the Everglades and what have you, and to me, as long as it's food, I'm not questioning the type of food, just as long as there's enough of it, because I'm a big eater. But a lot of people are different. Now, her food, if she cooks it herself, that's what she wants. But she don't care if anybody's cooking.
Oh, no.
Now, see, and back in the CC camps, I studied cooking. Studied real for a long time. In fact, I taught it for 7 years. Mm. I was in charge of, 14 or 15 CC camps, complete charge of it. I taught cooking and baking up in Fort Benning, Georgia, and Camp Jackson, South Carolina. And when I first got into CC camp, I was so doggone near starved to death, I got in the kitchen getting up to eat. And so I said, well, this is a place for me to be.
Uh-huh.
Right.
All right. Yeah.
And so I began to study and learn all I could on this thing. And many times, Mom and Papa come up to CC camp, and I'd be cooking oysters and whatnot. I'd take them out a plate and let them eat in the car and what have you. But I could come down to Mom's house and show her a shortcut on some particular food. Oh, brother, that's all out of question. So I just got to point out and say anything else. Now that's one thing she was touchy on. Ooh, you can't even mention that, period. But she could cook the best roast beef and the best pound cake and the best fried squirrel or rabbit or quail you have ever tasted in your life. But, oh, I gave Papa a complete set of knives. He couldn't take care of knives. Mom would have him in there chopping everything under the sun with him. And I gave him a stove one time, refrigerator another time, and different things like that. I never forget her. I gave her a big frying pan. She liked a big frying pan for frying certain things in. But she didn't know her temperatures or spices or timing. She didn't know nothing. Just cooked, and that was it. And so I got this big frying pan, she turned on the electric stove and forgot about it, and that frying pan was red hot. And she walked down and said, my God, and she threw a glass of water in when she did the thing split right in half.
Yeah.
She cried about that.
Well, now it's hard to realize, as good a cook as she was, that she had to pick up a lot of points along the
way. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And when she started, it'd be interesting to know.
Now she can cook she cook a pound cake, and I know the shortcuts, the finer points, but she can cook a pound cake that I can't touch.
Mm-hmm.
She can cook a fruit cake that the book does not tell you.
That's
and I have to write the Navy cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't touch certain things that she can do. So.
Mm-hmm.
I can make it edible. It's very pleasant. It's looks good, it tastes good, and it smells good. If it meets those three categories, it's going to be good. But that's one thing I never tackled her on, never in my life on the cookie, because she stopped me right quick in my steps when I started to suggest something. I
said,
at the wrong angle.
Yeah. And none of that.
If there's going to be any talking, she's going to do it.
That's right, right. Now, Pop was different. He has a very flexible mind. He was open for suggestions.
Yeah.
He said, son, what do you think of this? And I gave him my opinion. He said, well, that sounds pretty good. That's not good enough. Let's do it this way. And he'd take his pencil and show me.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know how much education Pop had?
Not much.
Third grade. But I'll tell you what he'll do. He'll take that pencil. He won't use a big piece of paper like this. He might use a match cover and use 1/3 of this, and he'll sit there and how many square feet of shingles, how many square feet in this house, or what have you, how many board feet, linear feet of lumber, what not on that boxcar. He'd run up there and there it is right there. I'd get around to the figures. I said, how'd you do that? He said, well, it's simple. And I could get that pencil, I'd get down the face, and I'd come within just a few feet of it, of what he did, but I wouldn't do it in 3 seconds like he was, or 3 minutes.
It'd
take me
on the match cover.
Take me to 3 yellow pads. Right. It is. Well, see, he lived that. It's just like anything else in life that you do.
Yeah.
If you really want to, you can do it.
Just live it.
Just live it. You can sell in anything you want to, provided you want to.
Yeah. I try to work along with these youngsters up here on the campus. And they got enough of the modern influences. I try to give them some of the old influences.
Kind of hard to pack it in, isn't it, sometimes?
Yes, there's nothing in their surroundings now that would show those things that you've been talking about. I know I was over here at Ms. Blissen's across creek, and Crosby had been taking up a grove for her, and he told her he didn't want to do it. Well, he didn't have to, you know, and he had enough to do. She didn't have much to do. And And she's had a grove there since she come down from Georgia in 1935, around that. And run a fish place and had fishermen over there and made a lot of money and done everything. Well, it would have been, you'd just say, I sure would love to work, hire out to her and just hear her talk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went back up there to the office and I talked to him a little bit and I said, now, here's some places and everything. Well, little girls came in. She says, you know, you said boys, I guess, but girls can do the things too now. And you know what she said? She says, what are the hours and how much does she pay?
Mm-hmm.
They all do that. Another little girl, I don't know why I didn't tell about girls, studying journalism. I said, how you getting along with journalism? That sure is nice. Well, she says, I'm not doing so good. So well. I said, all you need is go out and perform. You don't need to study journalism. Well, she says, I tried to get a job at St. Pete for the summer, and they had 12 openings, and they had about 700 applications. You see, they got to step into a job, so much in an hour, so many hours, mm-hmm. and the fringe benefits. That's all they know. There's absolutely no way of that child going out there and writing anything unless it's on a job.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a great handicap.
It's an awful handicap.
That's all they'll ever know,
Ralph. That's right, right.
Well, now you see, what chance, if they got to talk to Phil, they wouldn't know what he's talking about, would they?
They wouldn't know what he's talking about. Right?
But you grew up in a different way, you see.
Oh, yes.
You can listen to them.
Oh, yes, sure, right. Guy, I've been in business a good long time. Of course, I took the kind of rough business, which has mostly been financing and whatnot, small loans, then to the real large financing, factoring, what have you. And, but I learned a good long time ago, and this I came up with my own theory a long time ago. If a man walked into my office for a job, the first thing I ask him, and I will still stick to this, education or no education, and I asked him, why did he come into my office for the job? That's the first thing I asked him. Why? He says, well, I want a job. I said, what kind of job do you want? Do you want a white collar job? He says, yes, you're in the wrong place. But wrong place. This is no white collar job. This is a workhouse. Another next one comes in. I said, why did you come here? He says, I need the work. Why do you need it? I've got a wife and two kids. I've got to feed them. What kind of work did you do before? And I check into it. I asked him again. I said, are you willing to work 26 hours a day and 8 days a week? He says, yes, sir. I said, now don't tell me something just to get a job to feed your family. It's got to be honest and sincere. So, if he comes up to those qualifications, I tell him, I want to check your background from A to Z. It's better be clean. I'm going to demand a lot out of you. I may call you at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet, but this business is going to go. And whatever I say do, that's what you're going to have to do. Now, if you think you can stand those qualifications, I would consider putting you on the payroll. And if I do put you on the payroll, I'm going to hire you on probation. As simple as this. At the end of 90 days' time, I'm going to either give you an increase in salary or fire you on the spot if you last 90 days. And I do that to this day.
Yeah.
And brother, you'll be surprised what you can weed out. They just fall like flies.
Yeah.
And save yourself how much trouble?
Oh, I run through 50 men. I'm a high two. Then I tell them, all right, you've got to go down and take a polygraph test of men and the women. I'm going to find out what you're made of. And that's the last thing we do is that polygraph test. And when you say polygraph test, what is that? See if you're telling a damn lie or not. Just as simple as that. Some of them won't show up again. The ones that will, you know what? They turn out to be good men. Then in 90 days' time, I'll give them a nice increase in salary. And you'll be subject to an increase in salary every 6 months. There's a ability from then on that'll be left entirely up to me. And I started this like a long time ago, and it's never failed yet. But you'd be surprised the ones you run off. But you like when a man said, walks in there and says, well, what's the working hours and how much does it pay? I said, you're not looking for a job, you're looking for a position. Go down and talk to the person in the bank or some other place. You're wasting my time.
Oh, man. There's just no end to the loan business, is there?
No, guy, this thing you call financing has gotten so big. Because the different companies merge and participate in these different things, just like in, I was working with James Talcott. The company is 116 years old, was formed in 1854, worth about $600 million. And just like Eastern Airlines back when was it in 65 or 66, they bought all these jet planes, $50 million investment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
True.
So James Talcott puts up $25 million in 25 participating banks, because the banks don't have any money. Let's face it, the banks don't have any money at all. Who owns the money? It's your insurance companies. Oh, yes. Well, your banks operate, they collect agencies for these big insurance companies. Any big building or development or whatnot, your insurance companies are behind these things. Well, your bank's got a few dollars, yeah, but they act as a front, and they swing the deal because they can borrow from an insurance company. Say, all right, they can borrow from them 4 or 5%. Or participate with the insurance companies, all right? When this thing is pooled, then the profit split 25 or 30 different ways, see? Oh, it's a tremendous thing anymore.
Do you borrow from your insurance company?
Oh, no. We don't. We borrow directly from our local banks. But at the same time, our banks. See, your banks don't borrow too much from the insurance companies. They operate on your money and my money, no mortgage loans and what have you. But when it comes into real big, big money,
yeah,
then it's when the insurance companies come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
if a bank can make a gross of 7 to 8% or net 3 to 4% over a fast turnover on this money, over volume, just like your supermarkets and what have you, volume is the answer.
Ralph, the people I see, you know, the poor people, they got the backs of the wall constantly.
That's right.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Why they can't get a week ahead to save them.
That's right, yeah.
And it don't matter how many members of the family work, it's still the same.
Same thing. I attended a meeting the other night, and this is something that I've known approximately on this all along. But they brought out this, what came from the Social Security office, and which has been studied and a proven fact, and the Labor Board. And here's the way they break this thing down. When a person from 25 to 35 years of age, he doesn't have time to save because he's just starting out in life and maybe got some babies and trying to buy new furniture, new automobiles and whatnot. So he just can't save in those first 10 years. From 35 to 45, he has gotten a little further in life. His kids are in school. He's bought a home. And he and the wife both are working this and that. They just don't have time to save anything at all. From 45 to 55, the kids are in college, or somebody's had a setback, and this and that. From 45 to 55, they just don't have time to save a dime, period, let's face it. So it winds up at 65 years of age. You know what percentage of people who are self-surviving without turning around for help from the welfare department over and above Social Security? 2%. That's two people out of 100 in this modern country we call the United States of America. Isn't that, isn't that disgusting? 2% only. I thought it run a little higher, and I thought around 5 or 6% in my own thought. Because, see, I deal with people. My country, we got about 45,000 accounts in 40 states. In fact, I got a watch line I can call anywhere in the United States. That doesn't cost anything at all. But at the same time, that watch line cost me $1,650 a month, and we've got six of them. That's $9,900 a month for one telephone. I mean, for six telephones. Not including your QZ numbers and your private numbers and what have you. This is only telephones. So our amount of profit has got to be tremendous, including, see, we got all, we got 3,600 square feet. We got 36,000 square feet on the top floor of the 10th building. We got computer schools, we got everything under the sun. We're quite diversified. We're involved in everything under the sun. In fact, one of our subsidiaries is the world's largest distributor of your tapes, recording, and all this bebop stuff for teenagers. That's a fast turnover, it's a lot of money. But you got to be up to date. The first thing you know, if you're not up to date, all it goes in the trash can.
You can't just sit on your can.
You can't, guy. You can't sit on a can with my business. You can't even not for 5 minutes.
Yeah. There's too much going on.
Too much going on. Absolutely right.
Why, you have to go to school all the time?
To your practice, yes. Which I like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just
changing
so fast.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I notice is the young people have such great confidence. What lies ahead of them, you can't warn them about anything. They think marriage is a fine thing. And marriage, 9 times out of 10, you see, can just be disastrous.
It can, sure. Mm-hmm.
For the simple reason that they're not critical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just think that because it's marriage, they'll carry them through.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I tell you what I thought about the Kent State shootings up there.
Mm-hmm.
Those little co-eds and boys had such, they were absolutely unconscious of all those soldiers out there with live ammunition. I spent 4 years in the Army, and I had that ammunition, and I was out with these fellas, and you could not hire me to get out there.
No,
those fellas.
You're right. They're not conscious of these things going on.
And there they were just, they just felt like they had to protest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they could protest, but not in front of them guns.
No, I don't think so.
But you see, they're just not critical.
No.
They're not critical of anything. They have that vast confidence.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well,
vast confidence is good, guy, provided you got something to back it up.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was the time they get something. See, it'll be being pretty deep, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
No,
but I'm going to have to run.
Aren't you going to? I'll fix your bed.
No, I better go on, because Juanita and I haven't had a chance to talk to Juanita today at all. There's a few things about the legal terms on this place up here that I discussed briefly with her and Paul today, about 20 to 30 minutes, and everybody's running in and out. And this will that was left, I've never seen anything quite like it in my life. And I have seen a lot of wills. I've seen a lot of legal documents. But thank God they left it like they did, because it's just as muddy as water and contradictory right down the line, which can be solved real easy. I was afraid they might stipulate something in that particular will that could not be corrected, could not be solved. But this can be. Because